The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but might just as well believe in any mythology or comic book figure for that matter, like Superman, for instance. Well, my friend, the 1979 Superman movie, and I loved it. Didn't have much plot, but I loved it. Comic book-like and fantastic as it was, did have Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor. Who could forget him buying up worthless desert real estate in the eastern part of California, in order that he might later on send a missile into the San Andreas Fault and destroy Western California, sinking a good deal of California into the ocean, and showing Christopher Reeves his special new map, Lex Luthor says, "Goodbye, California. Welcome, Lutherville," with cities like Casa Deluxe, Otisburg. And then, of course, he looks at Ned Beatty and says, "Otisburg. Otisburg, it's just a little place, but Otisburg, okay, well, we'll just wipe it off, that's all." Well, no, California has not had that major earthquake yet, but a political, social earthquake is brewing. Our state legislature in Sacramento just voted to make California a sanctuary state. We've already had some sanctuary cities, now a sanctuary state. Governor Brown has already promised to sign the bill. Has not signed it yet. So, essentially, the California government is saying it does not have to obey federal law on one particular issue. Will it remain one issue? Human nature, especially where politics and social issues are involved, tend to never get enough once a taste of certain freedoms, quote unquote, goes down the palate. The question then is, what other federal laws will California decide it is free to disobey? Only time will tell. Well, we're getting to the point where I don't think the future is hard to predict anymore in terms of probabilities. We cannot yet speak to the future with absolute certainty. Meanwhile, there is a clear observation we can make about what has already happened in the past. Lest our memories fail us, when the people of California voted for Proposition 8, the marriage bill, it was eventually overturned by the United States Supreme Court to the delight of our Democratic-run state legislature and other progressives, who says, well, despite the California Constitution being amended to say that marriage is between a man and a woman, California is not a separate country from the United States and must therefore obey federal law. So regardless of what Californians voted, we must obey the law of the land. That's what you kept hearing after that. It's now the law of the land, the law of the land. Now, that was then. This is now. Let's see what they say about the need to obey the law of the land in the present. Oh, that's right. They just did. Welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters, a place where you can challenge the Bible or the Christian position on many of today's social issues and still be treated with respect. Now, that respect in the world of debate and academia and news does not always cut both ways. That's the understatement of the century. Last week, you'll recall that on this program, I commented on a recent cover from Charlie Hebdo, the satirical magazine in France. Shortly after Hurricane Harvey hit land, Charlie Hebdo had put out a cover showing Nazis drowning in Texas with the following caption in French: "God exists. He's drowned all the neo-Nazis of Texas." Apparently, This is what happens when people from other countries get their talking points from our mainstream media and Democratic pundits who seek to demonize all who do not think exactly as they do, who rather than debating people with differing viewpoints instead resort to labels of character assassination such as hate-filled for those who do not accept gay marriage, misogyny for those who do not accept abortion, or racist for just about anything, but these days very popular to say racist for anybody who just stands by the constitutional call to strengthen our borders and stop illegal immigration. Well, I defended the magazine's right to print that satire back in 2015 after Islamic terrorists gunned down some 12 of their staff for a picture of Mohammed, several cartoons of Mohammed that they'd been in the habit of making. Ironically, while many of us defended them, their editor did knuckle under by promising, not long afterwards, no more cartoons of Mohammed. Here's a quotation, not the entire interview, but a few highlights from what he said to Stern magazine, a German magazine. He says, "We have drawn Mohammed to defend the principle that one can draw whatever they want. It is a bit strange, though. We are expected to exercise a freedom of expression that no one dares to." Then he also went on to say, "We've done our job. We have defended the right to caricature." So he's saying, we've done our job, but, you know, reading between the lines, he's making it clear, well, we're not going to do that anymore. We're bold, we're cutting edge, but we're going to stop. So it looked like kind of a knuckling under. Now, as you know, as you probably know, if you've been following this show and other things I do, I write a column for the online magazine Communities Digital News. Last week, as I often do, when the radio show was over the next day, I took part of my radio monologue, in this case, the part about Charlie Hebdo, and I turned it into a column. I sent it in, and they published it for me. But while doing this, while preparing the column, I got to tell you honestly, something occurred to me while I was writing it. And I don't know why it didn't occur to me when I prepared last week's radio show monologue. I wish it had, but it didn't. What occurred to me was that while I did remember the editor of Charlie Hebdo backing down way back in 2015, there was always a chance that Hebdo had regained a bit of its backbone over the past 2 years. So I did some research, and here's what I found. Despite their editor backpedaling about pictures of Mohammed, Charlie Hebdo has since then occasionally continued to do satire about Islam. That's important in as much as I was calling out their cowardice last week, the cowardice of making sport of Christians but not Muslim terrorists. Of course, it changes nothing about most of what I was saying, how horrible I thought that cover about the Texans was, how unfair. But I did make sure to include this new piece of information in my CDN article. And just to be fair, I felt I owed that extra amendment to you, my radio audience, as well. Yes, there has been backpedaling at Charlie Hebdo. They still, to my knowledge, will not draw pictures of Mohammed, but they haven't refused to make pokes of Islamo-terrorists. So good for them. Let's always give credit where credit is due. On to other news, back to California, and what could be more newsworthy in California than Berkeley? Good old Berkeley. Berkeley, in the 1960s, proud reputation fighting for free speech. They were the leader of free speech on the college campus. Berkeley, in present day, shameless reputation fighting against free speech on the college campus. Now, the chancellor, to her credit, is trying to correct this reputation, even if motivated, apparently, by a desire to clean up Berkeley's bad press these recent months with all the riots and things every time a conservative speaker comes. Unfortunately, after years and years of students being encouraged, even by many of their teachers, and this isn't just at Berkeley, this is at many of our campuses, but right now we're talking about Berkeley, encouraged even by teachers to protest those who come on campus with opposing views, rather than relish the opportunity for constructive debate, after years of students unlearning that the purpose, the original purpose of a college, was to teach them how to think instead of what to think. After years of them unlearning that, it just seems the stallions have already left the corral. Unless freedom of speech is reintroduced organically in most of the classrooms, Well, then bringing out the police to protect a conservative speaker, well, that'll be about as effective in promoting civil dialogue as offering a Band-Aid to a cancer patient. I don't know what parents are paying to send their kids to Berkeley. Neither do I know what alumni and other patrons are contributing, but I do know this. It's too much. Well, if you would like to respond to anything I said so far, you can reach me on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. Regarding California as a sanctuary state, Melinda on Facebook, who used to live in California, but now lives in Idaho, says, glad I got out in time. Well, thanks, Melinda. That makes the rest of us that are still here not feel too great. Gary says there can be legal measures employed to go after the AG for not enforcing the law, AG Attorney General. Don't know if Sessions has the guts to push it. Since we're on the radio, I said guts. I replaced the word he used. You can use your imagination. Brendan says, aside from being another in a long line of stupid pandering gestures, does this really mean anything? Most police forces that handle crime in general are either city, county, or federal. Well, yeah, what's different about it, though, Brendan, is that this time there are going to be directives to the state, to police departments and counties. Anyway, now this is from Tim, our friend who I read a lot of his comments last week, and he was invited to come back again this week. You may recall at the end of the show, he got on just really late. I invited him to call in earlier, put him on. Anyway, he has not called yet. Don't know if he will. He said he might, so there's no commitment. But anyway, that did not keep him from writing a very long response to the Facebook version of what I just said about the sanctuary state. And here's what he says. Bob, respectfully, you're conflating two different concepts rather than using a legal analysis. The sanctuary state issue has to do with the extent to which California government and police enforce federal immigration laws. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the federal constitution gives the federal government exclusive jurisdiction over this area. While the feds can ask nicely and threaten funding cutoffs to states for not enforcing these federal laws, anyone respecting state rights can understand how California can choose not to assist to federal government in its exclusive jurisdiction. Now, Proposition 8, well, I'll tell you what he says about Proposition 8 when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I wanted to invite you to a special event this Saturday on September the 23rd at Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore on Balboa Avenue, for those who are listening here in San Diego. I will be joining other authors for a book signing and promotion of our novels. Mine will be The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I want to invite all my listeners to come out and meet me. Maybe get a signed book to give out as an early Christmas present this year. It would be great to see you. Refreshments will be provided. And it should be a lot of fun to meet a wide variety of authors. And for those of you who are used to buying things off Amazon.com, it might reorient you to something some of you may not have ever heard of it. There used to be this thing called bookstores where the books were on this piece of furniture called a shelf. Anyway, it's a great bookstore, Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore. Well, why are they great? Well, they're very interesting, but of course, I would think they're great just for selling my book. That's this Saturday, September the 23rd, from 12 noon to 3 in the afternoon. If you can't get there right at 3, drop in anytime you like. There'll be a lot of meet and greet. We'll each be promoting our books, then we'll each be signing. I do hope to see you there. Okay, early in the program, I started talking about the fact that California, once Governor Brown signs the bill that just passed in Sacramento, will become a sanctuary state. And I was comparing that to the fact that when California, and it wasn't really the government of California, it was the people of California through a ballot measure back in 2008 during the election, they chose to make marriage between a man and a woman part of the California state constitution. There had already been a ballot measure to pass that, but these days everything goes through judges. It was struck down because they said it was unconstitutional, didn't square with California's constitution. So what did they do? They changed California's constitution. I went on the air right after they did that. I said, just watch. Some judge will rule that the California constitution is unconstitutional. Well, that's just exactly what they did. So the Supreme Court overturned it. And then the people in California said, well, it's the law of the land. California is not a separate country. We're part of the United States. It's the law of the land. So what I was doing was trying to call for some consistency here, that on one hand, we're to obey the law of the land when the federal government strikes down some will of the people that some of our senators did not like. But on the other hand, when the senators themselves want to do that, well, the heck with the federal government. We'll do our own law. Anyway, I'm reading from our friend Tim, who felt that I was making an unfair comparison. And right before we went to the break, I read where he was claiming why he didn't believe that California's really doing anything unconstitutional. Of course, the question is then, if the law was already fine the way it was, then why did they need to pass a new law? But anyway, I'll respond to more of that in a moment. I want to finish Tim's letter first. Now he talks about Proposition 8 that we had in California in 2008. He says, now Proposition 8 superficially may look like a states' rights issue, but a deeper analysis reveals it was always about preserving fundamental rights of the individual and equal protection under the law. No state can make a law that violates a federally recognized individual right or three similarly situated people differently without proper justification. For example, the California Constitution could never ban Wesleyan churches from the state. He likes to talk about Wesleyan churches because he knows I go to a Wesleyan church. Okay, I'm a pretty interdenominational guy, too. I was actually ordained as a Baptist. I am part of a Wesleyan church right now. Anyway, I'll continue. For example, California Constitution could never ban Wesleyan churches from the state because it would violate federal constitutional individual rights. Whether one personally disagrees with the Supreme Court's decisions on particular individual rights is irrelevant to this legal analysis. To be clear, I'm addressing the law as it is. I sincerely hope anyone disagreeing with my position can use legal analysis of established law and not how one might like the law to be in pointing out how my reasoning is flawed. Well, okay, Tim, I'm not an attorney. I don't believe you are either, but I ran by my response as I was thinking about it with an attorney friend just to make sure I was on the right track for what that's worth. Certainly, you could find attorneys that disagree on things too, but the law is actually very clear on this. So, Tim, it may be true that legal officials have flexibility in the enforcement of laws, but that is not the same as them being allowed to actually work against the federal law. For example, let's say the Trump administration contacted the Sheriff's Department of San Diego or whatever the chain of command is, if you needed to go through the mayor, however they would do it. And he says, well, it's up to you because we don't have the right to force you to do this, but we would sure appreciate it if you would inform us should you come into contact with an undocumented person. Okay. Well, in the past, according to the law, as Tim stated, and that on its face, that was correct. They, up to now, the local government could choose or not choose to do that, to cooperate. However, with some amendments to this new Senate Bill 54, some amendments regarding criminal activity beyond the crime of simply being here illegally, with those amendments, even if the sheriff wanted to comply with the Trump administration or whatever the administration is, under this new California law, the state would be telling him he's not allowed to comply. And that is in violation of Title 8 of U.S. Code Section 1373, which was passed in the year 2011. The Supreme Court actually upheld this provision, incidentally, in 2012 in Arizona versus the United States. Section 1373 doesn't force local enforcement officials to notify federal officials when they detain an illegal alien. It simply says that local governments can't ban law enforcement officials from doing so. Also, before all this talk about sanctuary cities, remember, California had for the longest time given out driver's license to illegal immigrants. And with a driver's license, you can vote. So that tells you something about their regard for the law. The public schools are not allowed to even ask if somebody's here legally. And so I raise the question again, where is this going to lead?
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We're in the midst of a discussion I'm having with one of our listeners, Tim, who he felt that I was conflating what's going on with the sanctuary city with what went on with Proposition 8 because I feel there's some hypocrisy for saying it's the law of the land when the Supreme Court overturns something and we like it. And but on the other hand, if we want to disobey the federal government, well, then we talk about states' rights. So I addressed already why I disagreed with Tim's feeling that there was nothing wrong with it being a sanctuary state. Again, he wasn't claiming he had an opinion emotionally about one way or the other. He was just saying, I want a discussion about what the law says. But he had also mentioned in that letter, you will recall, that when we made a law against same-sex marriage, that that violated our 14th Amendment in the Constitution, equal protection under the law. Now, what's interesting is the 14th Amendment was put into our Constitution as a result of dealing with slavery, the ending of slavery, the abolishment. It simply says, and I read as much of it as I can over the air. I'm not going to read a whole phone book for you, but all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of laws. I know all this legal aid. Party of the first part, here to worry, bequeathed to parties. But anyway, basically, they're saying that all citizens of the United States have equal protection under our law. That's the way it's been coined the most. And it does say equal protection of the laws at the end there. But Tim, our forefathers were not thinking about marriage because in those days, the state had nothing to do with marriage. Because we're a Judeo-Christian nation, we started out that way. The Constitution doesn't say we have to be Judeo-Christian. The Constitution defends religious freedoms, but because most people here had Judeo-Christian values at that time, it's the responsibility of the synagogues and the churches to perform marriages, and or they had what they called common law marriages, where if two people just decided that they were married, the state did not interfere with that. Marriage licenses and the government getting involved with marriage didn't happen until the 1800s. Now, politically, I'm an independent. I'm a libertarian on some issues. I'm not a libertarian across the board because I think libertarians at times get inconsistent. I am a libertarian on this. Well, since it had gotten involved and it had been that way for many years, then when people wanted the government to also allow same-sex marriage, I had my reasons for objecting to it. And I went on record as saying, if I thought for 1 second that legalizing and getting the state involved to legalize same-sex marriage will cause the militant, and I know they don't speak for all gay people, but the politically militant gay community, if that would get them to stop, say, okay, we're square, that's all we wanted. I said, if they stopped there, I would not agree with it as Christian, but I could live with it. But I knew it would not stop there, that once that became the law, then the next thing would be that they'd start going in and start telling churches what to do and go into different Christian professions. That kind of thing is starting to happen in many places, as a matter of fact. But anyway, the state got involved. The state was not involved with marriage when the forefathers wrote that. So it apparently was not on their mind when the Constitution was first written, or the people later on after the Civil War, when they added the equal protection under the law. Anyway, flash forward to the present. Many who opposed changing the definition of marriage legally, people like me, still supported civil unions. A lot of states had civil unions or domestic partnerships, and we were probably on the road to all of them having them in time. With such an ideal scenario, there would have been no financial benefit denied a gay couple and no hospital visitation suppressed. So legally, homosexual couples would have all the same rights financially and religiously, depending on the church, they would have had affirmation of marriage because there are many liberal churches that were willing to do that, many gay churches that were willing to do that. Now, I honestly appreciate anybody's desire for people to be fair and compassionate and offer equal protection. I really do. But ladies and gentlemen, please think about this for a moment. If gay couples were already able to be married by choosing from a wide array of liberal churches, if they also had legal civil unions, if they decided to then call themselves married, as they had been doing for many decades anyway, And if nobody was passing any law against their freedom of speech to describe their relationship any way they chose, well, then what possible reason remained for demanding that the entire country change its definition of marriage, other than to insist on affirmation from people who had a right to their own opinion about varying lifestyles? Very early in the militant gay movement, one of their spokesmen was very honest about this. He said, "We are no longer seeking just a right to privacy and a protection from wrong. We also have a right, as heterosexual Americans already have, to see government and society affirm our lives." That was the homosexual spokesperson Jeff Levy in a speech for the National Press Club in Washington all the way back in the year 1987. Now, think about this. How do you insist that an entire society affirms something without challenging freedom of speech? What about those who cannot in good conscience affirm a homosexual lifestyle for religious or other reasons? When one group of people demands affirmation, how does the First Amendment apply to everybody, especially when talking about equal protection under the law? Also, in addition to equal protection under the law, we have another amendment, the Sixth Amendment, that says there shall be no religious test ever required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. And then let's not forget our First Amendment. People always call it the separation between church and state. Those words are not actually there in the Constitution. They come from a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote years later in an effort to protect the church, by the way. But what it actually says in the Constitution is Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or the press, or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. This includes the rights of Christians to not be forced to affirm something that violates their beliefs. Speaking of equal protection under the law.
Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Back to our program. I was quoting from the First Amendment, which says that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion. That includes, as I said, the rights of Christians not to be forced to affirm something that violates their beliefs. That means if they don't want to rent their building out for a gay marriage service, they shouldn't have to be doing that if that's their religious convictions. That means if a Christian baker doesn't want to bake a cake with figures of a same-sex couple, he shouldn't have to. Now, that story that you've probably all heard in the news has been around for a couple of years now. He did not have a sign on his door saying, "We will not sell cakes to gay people." But that was his art. That was his expression. They came in and wanted him to bake a cake and dress it up so that it was very clear that this was a cake for a gay wedding. There were other places they could have gone to get that cake. Similar to a photographer that was told he had to go photograph a gay wedding. They refused to do it. And then it was a judge who went and told them to do that. See, people started feeling emboldened. Not as many people were going and asking for these things before it became legal, gay marriage. But what they're doing now is they're going, well, it's the law of the land, so you've got to do this. There were even some cases. There was a church in New Jersey. This was long before they even overturned Proposition 8, where back then it wasn't really legal anywhere for a gay couple to get married, but just a couple that wanted to have a civil union service and use one of their buildings on the church property, they were ordered by a judge to do it. So I believe we're reaching the time very soon where pastors will be told that they're going to lose their tax-exempt status if they do not perform gay marriages. Now, if you think I'm getting paranoid, I wish you could meet some of my parishioners who were in my ministry 20, 25 years ago. All the things that are happening today, I told them back then would happen. And I'm not trying to praise my predictive powers. I think it was a pretty easy thing to predict if people wanted to just look at the trend. Because like I said, human nature is never satisfied. That's something we all have to fight against. eHarmony.com is a Christian dating site. They were ordered by a judge to provide a gay section. Well, they don't believe in that. Supposing somebody went to a gay baker and said, we're going to have a heterosexual standard traditional wedding, and we want you to write in the cake that marriage is just between a man and a woman. We want you to actually spell that out. I think there would be a lot of protests. See, it's nice to ask once in a while how this would be if it happened the other way. What if somebody told a Muslim or an Orthodox Jew that they had to sell pork when they thought that was wrong? See, we keep bringing up this equal protection under the law, but we realize that there are situations. Now, if they were saying we won't serve any food to a certain kind of person, that's a different story. And if they're under capitalism, there's always somebody that's going to sell you something. If it became a problem, I wouldn't have an issue with the government stepping in like they do with welfare and saying, okay, then we'll just have some state government stores where anybody could shop. But it would never come to that anyway. But I'm just saying, even if it came to that, there are things that could be done. And so, with all our Constitution says about freedom of religion, how are religious people these days getting their equal protection under the law? Well, that was my long answer to Tim's long comment. Other comments regarding what I said about Berkeley on Facebook, Max, Al, Brendan, Dan, Linda, Patty, and RK all liked what I said. Steve says, you are correct, Bob. Gotta love the liberals. It's okay for them, but not if you disagree. I have a saying I use. They named a street after them. It's called One Way. Wayne says, it starts with a single step. I was raising the question, how would we bring free speech back out to the campus? Wayne says it starts with a single step. That's true. And I think one of the single steps may have happened. Carol sends me a video of Ben Shapiro. Now, he was the conservative speaker whom Antifa, the fascist organization that claims they fight fascism, and others were protesting. Before he even came out to speak, he's a conservative. They were calling him a Nazi because to them, any conservative or Republican is a Nazi. This fellow is actually an Orthodox Jew. Ben Shapiro is an Orthodox Jew. What are the Nazis famous for? Murdering the Jews, the American Nazis, and other American white supremacists like the Ku Klux Klan hate Jews as much as African Americans. Here's an Orthodox Jew, and they're calling him a Nazi. Does it just verify what I've told you? Our college campuses are not teaching students how to think, but what to think. But if you look at this video, and I had a chance to watch a little of it, not all of it, there was a time afterwards where one of the students started, well, several of them, but I saw one in particular challenging Ben Shapiro, and he sparred with them. And even though they disagreed, they had a very friendly, very productive exchange, something that probably tantalized and amazed the students because it's been so long since they've seen that on a college campus. Anyway, great dialogue between Shapiro and students, disagreeing, but with respect. Still, the school had to offer comfort rooms to anybody who was traumatized by his appearance. Just can't make this stuff up anymore. All right, let's totally switch gears. I'm going to begin a series. We'll get through as much as we can today, and we'll have other shows if we don't get through all of it. Let's get off of the politics, back to the Bible. This is the beginning of a series highlighting some of the Old Testament prophecies fulfilled by Jesus. These prophecies predicted the coming of the Messiah. That's from a Hebrew word, Meshua. It is in Hebrew. It means anointed one. That meant a special servant sent from God to deliver his people, Israel. For many years, prophets predicted somebody like that would come. Now, at the time that the Messiah did come, a lot of the Jews, in addition to speaking Hebrew, were speaking Greek, because Greek in those days was what English is today. It was the language of the court and the marketplace. Anybody that did trade or went to court or went to see an official, a lot of people just spoke Greek. Well, Christos, where we get the word Christ, that's the translation from the Greek translation of Messiah. So Messiah, Meshua, Hebrew, that's where Jesus Christ, Christ was not his last name. In those days, they would have called him Jesus, son of Joseph. Of course, we know him as the son of God, but Joseph was his adoptive father. People didn't understand that necessarily, so they, although there were rumors about it, and he would have been known as Jesus, son of Joseph. So it wasn't, hi, I'm Jesus Christ. These are my parents, Mr. and Mrs. Christ. That's not the way it worked out. There's an old joke. What was John the Baptist's middle name? The. Okay, I won't do that anymore. I'll continue. So before I get into this, I must address one of the most basic and fundamental objections to Christianity, the suggestion that Jesus never even claimed to be the Messiah, that he was only a good Jewish rabbi who taught nothing that would challenge the Judaism of his day. That is simply not true. And I'll tell you why it's not true when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
You know, it's common in today's uncertain economy to feel apprehensive. After all, the seemingly limitless choices in the housing market can look quite confusing. You might even know people who shared their difficult experiences with the housing market, sometimes losing money instead of what they had hoped would be a simple and profitable procedure. Well, here's the good news. Realty Executive All Areas here to help. Our track record is proven. Listen. Since 1994, we've sold thousands of homes in the San Diego area. What may seem like an obstacle to you is just a challenge for us. We thrive on multitasking and achieving goals. When faced with opportunities or unique situations, our level of determination goes into overdrive. We're confident we can use our skills to attend to your personal needs.
You can reach my friend Fred Falduti at 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717.
Or fredfalduti.com. That's Fred, FALDUTI.com.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connor's strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Jesus fulfill Bible prophecy? Did the Jesus that we know of in the New Testament really come in fulfillment of prophecy from some of them in the hundreds, some over 1,000 years ago in the days that we call the Old Testament? I'm claiming yes. Some say no. Before I went to the break, I said there's this idea very popular today that Jesus never even claimed to be the Messiah. Some people try to deny that he existed at all, but no serious scholar or historian would say that. Most historians, even if they're not Christians, even if they don't believe in anything supernatural, Jesus would at least acknowledge that he lived. So the discussion about what the living historical Jesus did is the more sane and the more fair discussion. And they claim he was just a good Jewish rabbi who taught nothing that would challenge the religion of his day. These same people say, indeed, it was the Apostle Paul who created the idea that Jesus is the Messiah who came to die for our sins. So, folks, this is an important place for me to start. After all, why bother to prove that Jesus came in fulfillment of prophecy if Jesus himself made no such claim? Let me make this as easy and as simple as I possibly can. It is impossible to read the New Testament and conclude that Jesus did not claim to be the Christ. Once again, Greek word for Messiah. People try to claim that the text is corrupt in those places, that the New Testament is unreliable for the history of Jesus. Now, the authority and trustworthiness of the Bible as a valid collection of historical documents is a discussion for a different show. I've done many such shows, as you know. I'll do many more such shows. But for now, just to put a pin on that today, if we cannot trust the only detailed documents about Jesus' life, on what basis do people conclude that he was just a good Jewish rabbi? They're forced to go to the same New Testament, picking and choosing which words they think belong there in the fine tradition of the Jesus seminar. For now, let's just look at what the New Testament actually says. If one wants to make the case that it's not a reliable document, the burden of proof is on him. Here are some scriptures where Jesus claimed to be the Christ, the Messiah. Matthew 16:15-17. But what about you, he asked, who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. Peter had the name Peter, and he also had the name Simon. It was very common in those days for people to have more than one name. Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. Matthew 26:63-67, Jesus was tried twice, first by the Jewish puppet court under the Romans, and then later on they sent him to Pontius Pilate because they did not have the authority under the Romans who conquered them to carry out death, even though they would have wanted to in Jesus' case. Here the high priest is talking, and the high priest said to him, I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. By the way, when they said Son of God in those days, it wasn't like we think today, oh, we're all sons of God. We're all daughters. That was a very special, specific messianic title. The term Son of God meant God incarnate. Now, that's not the way we think of it today, but what the New Testament meant to the audience it was written for, what the New Testament meant to the people who lived in ancient Israel and were speaking the language and interacting with you, that's what it really means. We can't impose our definitions of those words. We have to look back and do some studying and see what it meant to them. So anyway, the high priest said to him, I charge you under the oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said, we're all children of God. No, he didn't say that. I'm just kidding with you. Let me read what it really says. Far be it from me to add to the word of God. Yes, it is as you say, Jesus replied, but I say to all of you, in the future, you will see the Son of Man. That was another messianic title, Son of Man, meaning Son of Mankind, a new breed of man. God jump-started the human race by becoming a human being himself. We've gone into all of that before. We'll go into all of that again. But anyway, he's certainly claiming to be the Messiah here. There's several messianic titles he's being used. And he was already asked straight out if he was the Christ. And he said, yes, it is as you say. And then he uses another term that they had for the Christ, Son of Man. I say to all of you, in the future, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes. That's what they did when they thought somebody had spoken blasphemy. He said, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? He is worthy of death, they replied. Then they spit in his face and struck him with their fists. And then Mark 1:1, for those, there are some scholars today who like to make a big deal of the fact that, well, Mark was the original gospel, and you can't really trust much of what goes on in the other three gospels. There were four different eyewitness accounts of Jesus. Well, three eyewitness ones, and then Luke was a historian in his day, sponsored by a Roman dignitary to go and interview many different witnesses. But anyway, this is Mark. Mark was a servant of Peter. They called an amanuensis, a scribe. So the Gospel of Mark, it's somebody else writing Peter's words down, but it's Peter's recollection. Anyway, right there, Mark 1:1, right at the beginning of one of the Gospels that some people who even doubt the other ones, they don't doubt this one as much. It says right off the bat, kicks off with the beginning of the Gospel about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. There's the term Son of God. There's the term Christ. And Mark 15:2, are you the king of the Jews? Now before Pontius Pilate, the Roman trial. I told you he had two trials, one before the Jewish priests and rabbis, the other before the Romans. This is the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, a figure of history, by the way. They actually found a stone engraved and dedicated by him with his name on it. Actual archaeology that verifies his existence. So many things like that verify the Bible. Are you king of the Jews? Pilate asked. The king of the Jews was going to be the Messiah. What did Jesus say? We're all kings. No. Yes, it is as you say, Jesus replied. And then Mark 14, this gets back to the same conversation that the high priest was having with Jesus, but adds a little more to it. Again, the high priest answered, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? I am, said Jesus, and you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Well, now that we have established the claims of Jesus, let's see if his claims are in fact true. 700 years before Jesus was born, Isaiah the prophet predicted that the Messiah would die for Israel's sin and then rise from the dead. Other prophecies about the Messiah described a warrior who would deliver Israel from her enemies and then rule as king. That's Zechariah chapter 14. This alternate understanding of the Messiah became the more popular one. It is the type of Messiah Jews expected in Jesus' day, which explains why he was rejected and explains why Jews today have so much difficulty seeing. Just by the way, sometimes to even use the word Jew sounds derogatory to people. They go, the word is Jewish, not Jew. Well, just like they accused Ben Shapiro of being a Nazi, don't accuse me of anti-Semitism. I am Jewish. Oh, converted to Christianity, but I'm Jewish. My mother was Jewish. My father was Jewish. My Savior is Jewish. Did you know that Jesus was only half Jewish on his mother's side? Think about it. Okay, I'll continue. He was rejected. That's why Jewish people today have so much difficulty seeing him. But there had been a time when the Messiah was expected to suffer for our sins before ruling as king. Isaiah 53 is one of the places that talks about that. I have time to just read you a quick snippet right now. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows, yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. There's much, much more, but we'll have to continue that at another time.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.